There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. I'm glad to have you all along. Another couple hours of live local talk here on this Friday Eve. Thursday, some people call it, and lots to do on today's show. My buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. We're going to get in a conversation here in just a second, but maybe I'll use this as the opening here. Looks like President Biden did take my advice and is opening the Strategic Baby Formula Reserve, and he's moving into... Okay, well, it's not that, but he should have. We talked about this last week, that would be key for our country's sovereignty to have, like, in some salt dome somewhere, have a bunch of Enfamil or Similac, and then we could tap the, I don't even know what the acronym would be, but it would be that. But the baby formula shortage continues to go on. This is the discussion out there. The just from a marketing aspect, if from my lips to Washington's ears, they're calling this Operation Fly Formula. Now, I get it because they're flying formula in from other places. But when you put the word fly in and food you would give children, I just, Robert, help me here. I don't think I would have called it something else.
Yeah, as a marketing professional, I don't know that would be my formula. First choice. But, bravo to the administration for pulling the trigger on that. You can make the argument that they should have pulled the trigger quicker.
Right, that's what people are calling Defense Production Act, right? That's what's being kicked in here that gives President Trump had done it as well, Defense Production Act, when he was dealing with COVID. This is like a special rules overtime kind of thing.
Sure, before we get into the silly season discussion about issues that may have been discussed when somebody was a student government official in college, when you talk about truly the purpose of government, before we get into our left-right thing, most fundamentally, the government is there to keep everybody safe. And so when you talk about an issue like baby formula and us being in the position that we are right now, those are the type of things you want government jumping on as fast as possible and then clearing out all the roadblocks so that in partnership with the private sector, you can actually get things accomplished.
Yeah, I would say the getting out of the way part. Because, you know, where I come from this, in my view of government...
Sean, I was trying to keep this from being political.
But we are going to take it political.
Down this path already.
The government getting out of the way, I'm all on board. I'm 100% with you. Over time, this reliance on government's going to fix it. And believe me, this is, like, I got some of those kids. I'm into kids. Mm-hmm. I tolerate them. I want them fed. So this is not like, oh, I let them starve. But this question of the more government involvement versus just getting out of the way.
Here's the reason we have in place getting those out of the way. So before it gets political, right?
Okay.
If the private sector is operating independently, ultimately, and I think you and I agree, even though we have some differences philosophically, that the private sector solution tends to be superior to the government solution.
I agree. Yes.
Except when there's a crisis and there's no inherent profit motive. So there's no reason why the market would self-correct on this issue.
Right.
So now that you're in that posture, now you need government to get involved. It's the exact same thing that ended up happening with COVID.
Right.
So there was a point in time, particularly at the beginning, where there would have been no profit motive for the private sector
independently
to solve the problem, right?
They figured that out, how to profit
motive. And that's the reason why I was saying it's partnership between the public sector and the private sector. And of course, when anything's happening at scale, if there's not a profit motive for the private sector, you're going to have some level of government involvement.
Really?
Now, we can debate what the appropriate amount of government involvement
is. I realize I have a, probably one of the few that holds the opinion that I do here, because something that's as emotional as feeding children comes out, and, you know, I mean, this is left and right has called for doing something about it. I realize I take a kind of a contrarian opinion on it, but
sure,
nothing's new.
Every now and then you got to anchor on your libertarian views.
Refresh.
There
just a big refreshment of that. All right. And we will talk the Senate race, but I do, before we get there, and Robert and I didn't have much time to talk beforehand, so we're just kind of winging things. Looks like the Ministry of Truth is having a going out of business sale.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm actually not that familiar with that issue, but I heard you talk about it a little bit yesterday. I think maybe Jeff Poor had referred to it before that. We live in interesting times.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think somebody would have said, we can debate what the facts mean, but there should not necessarily be any debate about what a fact is. And when you bring that into the public sector, you're just on really thin ice.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Really thin ice.
Well, and that's a problem, because things change over time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've lamented this before, that I like there to be the days of there being established facts. Like, sun rises in the east. Now, Robert and Sean are going to debate whether that's a good thing or not. But we both agree that it rises in the east. Those days have gone behind us. But if from a conservative perspective, if you're bothered that there are social media sites or whatever, privately owned social media sites or publicly traded, but that are censoring speech, I would much rather have a business out there that you can choose to take part in or not,
sure,
censoring the speech, versus having the government come in and be in the business of censoring speech. And then you have what administration, what are their ideals, what is, you know, what facts are facts today. I the fact that that was even, that trial balloon was even, you know, floated, is scary to me, that somebody would think, oh, this would be a good thing.
And I don't think the concept in and of itself is problematic. And let me explain to you why, right? Now, we can very rationally debate whether or not that concept should exist anywhere, or whether it should sit in government, whether it should sit outside of government. And the reason why I mentioned that is just look at what happened in the 2020 election. So you had a number of people in prominent Republican circles who have sincerely articulated a belief that it was stolen in a way that I certainly do not believe. Now,
and in 2016, you had many Democrats.
No. We're not going to 2016. It's not the same situation.
Well, it is.
If you want to start talking about people who objected to certification of the election,
correct,
you're spot on.
Yeah.
But there's no
not
comparison.
Not the first time this has happened.
And you could go all the way back to 2000.
Sure.
If we go. But
hanging
the point
chads.
Is,
and, yeah.
The nature, the size, the number of people who are articulating and willing to articulate it publicly. Now, the part that's true, and we've debated this on the show before, is there were some changes to rules that may have happened without going through state legislatures, which is a very legitimate argument as to whether or not that should have happened. But given the fact that it did happen and the rules of the game that were applied, there has not been, of the 67 lawsuits that were filed, a number of them that were reviewed by Trump appointees, incumbent Republicans who are in office, no one is providing evidence of large-scale voter fraud.
And then my
personal favorite is, it's the money. So if someone was doing something like that, they would have been doing it because they were getting something. There would be a money trail somewhere, and it would have come out by now.
Last week, that new part of this that has interested me was added to it, and this is the part of, like, you go through the 2,000 Mules. I have not watched the whole thing, but you go through parts of it, and I'm like, yeah, that's conjecture. That's, you know, you're maybe spurious correlations.
Sure.
But the data where they have groups that are Democrat activist groups, and then these drop-off places, and they're tagging, geotagging, the number of times a vehicle went there. To me, that's a thing I want to see investigated.
Ballot harvesting.
And one thing, too, I will say this, which is going to be contrary to all sides, that doesn't mean those ballots weren't filled out by voters, you know, that legitimate voters voting for somebody. It's just the nature. It leads me to say, hey, we need to look into that,
but taking that and
multiple trips, dropping them off.
But here's the reason why I use that example when you tie it back to the concept of the ministry of truth, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason why I was saying the concept's not that far off. The question becomes is there a private entity that's balanced between Republicans and Democrats that do what, was it the Baker-Carter Commission or something back in the day who looked at it in an auditing sense and can do that validation as to what actually happened? That's a very rational thing to have. Now, the concept of being in the public sector and, you know, having political fingerprints on it, et cetera, et cetera, I understand that that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But the concept is not that far off.
I disagree, but we'll save that for another time. Pick that back up. All right, so the latest polling out now is Signal's been doing a lot of polling in the Alabama Senate race. How about this? These moves keep happening, but today, the latest, if you didn't hear Jeff talk about it, Katie Britt maintaining her lead at 30.8%, slipping slightly. Mo Brooks gained another 6 points since the last poll. He's now back up in second place at 28.5%. And Mike Durant slid, he came up 3 points to 24.3%.
You think it's about time for the former president to re-endorse somebody?
Well, here's what I think. So, and Senator Dick Brubaker, who was on with Jeff, said something I thought was really something. And can I prove this? I don't know. But the very silver lining to losing the Trump endorsement for Mo Brooks is that Congressman Brooks went from having to kind of do what wasn't his, sing a song that he didn't write, you know, about the MAGA movement and all that.
Yep.
Back to being Mo Brooks, who there's no question that, like, I fell out of my chair when I heard that, former President Trump called Mo Brooks woke. I'm like, you know, people could like Trump and go, that's the most ridiculous thing ever.
God, that was almost as bad as one of the commercials that called Governor Ivey liberal.
Yes.
It was just like, okay.
So when they did, former Senator Brubaker said, that gave him a chance to, now he's not going to talk about Trump stuff anymore. He's going to go back to doing what, and maybe that's the reason he's come up. I wonder if right here at the end, there's a silver lining to what was obviously a gray cloud for that campaign. It's kind of a weird thing, but.
No, I don't think so. What I think it was the president pulled the endorsement without giving another one.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who was going to vote for Mo Brooks before is still going to vote for Mo Brooks, right? So Mo Brooks' support didn't all of a sudden say, I want to support Katie Britt or Mike Durant. But what I really think the issue is I think Mike Durant's hot air balloon has started to sink.
Big time.
And a lot of that has to do with the reporting of the situation that was happening with that very, very tragic situation that happened with his sister and how that whole thing was handled.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of things that people will support. But something that's as fundamental and basic as, and you just know this, do you have siblings?
Yes.
So no matter what the situation is, the first person you're going to tell is your sibling. Mm-hmm. It just is, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's starting to hurt him. And then if you add on top of that, not debating, not doing a whole lot of on-air interviews on conservative talk radio stations, et cetera, that balloon has just started to sink. And so I think it's going to be interesting. I think you'll have the runoff, and it'll be Britt and
And Brooks. Yeah, they came after. You and I were talking during the news break. They came after Katie Britt because of, out of all the ridiculous things that happened, what she did when she was in government, student government.
Oh, my God. Sean, it's like there was a quote in Seinfeld said something like, whenever I think that you're shallow, you manage to drain a little bit more water out of the pool.
Right.
And it's just like every time I think that we're at the end of this theater of the absurd movies, there's just one other thing that comes out. I actually heard that for the first time at the tail end of Jeff's segment yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was heading home for lunch, and I heard it. I didn't even think it was true.
And what we're talking about here is this accusation of the abortion stance from a then member of the SGA at the University of Alabama.
So when she was Katie Boyd SGA back then. President.
Yeah, Katie Boyd back
while
then.
She was an undergrad.
Yeah.
There was the Student Government Association, their legislative branch, if you will, made a stand on an issue. And somebody is trying to critique her candidacy for United States Senate based upon the fact that she did not veto.
Right.
And there's some question as to whether or not you could veto, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just silly. You know what I mean? I was SGA president in high school, and I was class president at the Naval Academy. I can't imagine somebody going to any of the things that I did during that time and saying, oh, this is a reason why you wouldn't vote for this guy now. It's just, it speaks of desperation.
It does, yes. There's a tell to that. Coming right back, more with Robert Kennedy Jr. We'll talk about Kennedy for Alabama tonight. He'll line up what's on the show. We'll talk more about that when we return.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, and continuing our conversation, Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, tonight.
Alabama's back on air tonight. Before I talk about tonight, I want to shout out Secretary John Merrill, who was on the show last week. Yep. He very graciously came on. And what you and I talked about as well, we may disagree on some things philosophically, but just his willingness to come on and articulate what the facts are in terms of requirements, et cetera,
yeah,
was very, very good for us. And we really appreciate him honoring us by joining the show.
And you didn't – I mean, you took John Sharp to task a little bit about his – first time y'all met years ago.
yes. And shout out to John Sharp as well. Yeah. We've got to know each other very well here over the last 5 years. And I always tell folks, just like Sean Sullivan is responsible for getting me into a broadcasting career, John Sharp was the very first person to find me when everybody was looking for me 5 years ago.
Don't encourage Sharp.
So, yes, excited about tonight's program. So this is the last live show before the primary. And we are coming out of the gate with Mayor Brandon Dean, who is one of the candidates on the Democratic side for United States Senate. There was some recent polling data that came out that actually shows him currently in second to Dr. Will Boyd, who is the front runner on the Democratic side. And then we're going to have an opportunity to talk to Senator Malika Sanders Fortier, who is a current state senator out of the region around Selma, who is running for governor on the Democratic side. And I think she's currently polling in either third or fourth place on the Democratic side. So excited that the statewide Democrats have chosen to come visit us here on FM Talk 106.5 here in Mobile.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can go get the podcast from Robert's show or from my show, or any, you know, the 56 hours a week of shows we do around here. Get those podcasts and go through and find the candidates you're interested in. Mm-hmm. Because, listen, when somebody is – when you get a – you hear a radio ad from somebody or you're looking at a mailer or a billboard, you're getting a single-dimensional image
Absolutely.
Of that person. When you get them, be it Democrats, Republicans, when you get them on a radio show and you can ask a few questions, you just get to – you get a little more flavor.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And think about it this way, just in terms of time. So we run about 54 minutes on air. And of that 54 minutes, about 6 minutes is commercials. So you've got 48 minutes of content with two candidates.
Yeah.
It's like, where else outside of the talk radio space is anyone ever going to get that much time to actually hear somebody talk about what their views are?
What he said.
All indeed.
Right. We'll
indeed.
Be tuned in tonight. Thanks, Robert.
All right, man. You guys take care.
All right. Coming back, Ray Bellick from 1819 News joins me. There's the latest on this. I haven't waded into it yet, but I think Ray will. This name, image, and likeness question about Alabama recruiting, Texas A&M, and a whole lot more. We'll talk about that. And, oh, yeah, the Senate race as well.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Let's talk to our buddy, editor-in-chief at 1819news.com. Ray Millick joins us now. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Now, if we went back through and took the highlights from our weekly conversation about the Senate race and the number of times we went, well, maybe it'll be so-and-so in a runoff, these two, and then it'll be these two. I'm looking at this latest signal poll here, and once again, I mean, from week to week, it's changed, and obviously we are here in the very last minutes of the game, but a big gain, at least in the signal poll. Not only Mo Brooks going back into second place, man, he's within shouting distance with Katie Britt at 30.8%, Mo Brooks at 28.5%.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it? And I think, again, if there were highlights from our conversation, I think one of the things we would point out is that the undecideds and a lot of people that maybe just weren't ready to align themselves with Britt or Brooks were Durant people. And you're seeing the Durant people starting to fade a little bit. And again, I don't know. Turnout, as you and I have said before, is going to be incredibly important. But it is interesting that we're this close to Tuesday and it's still this volatile. And I don't remember what the undecideds were in that poll.
Maybe I think it's 10. I think just 10% of voters remain undecided.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's within the margin of error for everybody almost to get to the runoff. And then the great thing about the primary, too, is whoever wins it is at their ceiling, because that often happens where that one person that wins the primary with a certain number, but that's as good as they're going to get. The other person has a chance, usually typically, picks up the third, fourth, and fifth place people's votes, and suddenly it becomes a lot closer than you think it's going to be. So a lot of intrigue about this race.
Yeah, well, back when folks like me way back said, well, this Senate race is Mo Brooks' race to lose, well, maybe after we get done with the runoff and everything might be proven right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason at one time he had that huge, considerable lead, and I don't think it was all the Donald Trump endorsement. I think it was people that really, you know, resonated with Mo Brooks. And so he's taking some hits, he's fallen behind, you know, but I also think he is focused more on policy, which is his strength, and it will be interesting to see. And clearly Katie Britt has overcome the doubts of people that they've had, but she's taken some shots here in the last couple of weeks with some of the donations from the abortion crowd and some of those things that, you know, and that resonates with people too. So I don't know. We all felt like Katie Britt in the last 2 weeks she was going to win the primary, but I don't think winning the primary guarantees by any stretch that you're on the ballot in November.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee. And you mentioned the resurgence here of Congressman Brooks, and former state senator Dick Brubaker was on with our buddy in common Jeff on the Jeff Poor Show earlier today, and he said this, and I guess I had the reason why it was like an epiphany moment, I guess I had thought about parts of this but not put it together like the senator did. He said it was a blessing, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's somewhat of a blessing, or maybe a silver lining to a gray cloud, of losing the Trump endorsement, because at that point Congressman Brooks went from having to, you know, basically just campaign on the Trump endorsement to go back to, like you said, talk policy. I mean, that's what's made him, I'll tell you, a darling to talk radio. For me, it's been, you know, the fiscal conservatism, but he talks policy. He's a wonk. And maybe it's letting him get back out there. And instead of kind of just talking about the Trump endorsement and Trump things, he got back to doing what he does. You know, maybe that's helped.
Yeah, we had him on our podcast, 1819 News, the podcast, which you can get on Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, early on. And he sat and talked policy. And both Brian Dawson and I walked out of there going, if he talked like this all the time, he would still probably be the front runner. But he got so caught up in the whole Trump thing and the January 6th thing and all this stuff, which I get that. But that's his one strength, is he's got a real voting record that people can look at and go, okay, I know what he did in Congress. He's not going to be any different in the Senate. So it's either you like it or you don't. And I do think that, and I agree with you, and I think you and I have talked about it before, that losing the Trump endorsement might have forced him to get out there and sell Mo Brooks. And I think that resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy, though. I mean, it depends on the candidate, right? You might have some candidate that's not so policy driven, and just the discussion of Trump is the best thing they have, the best plank in their platform. But yeah, for somebody like Mo Brooks, it takes him away from doing the thing that put him where he is. And I mean, maybe you don't blame him with what the consultants will tell you and everything. You've got the Trump endorsement; you need to push it. But yeah, that in this case, it depends on the candidate, but a candidate like Mo Brooks, it maybe not that important for him.
Well, and you know, we go back, we've used this a lot, but that Virginia governor's race where and I got the governor's name, but it's
Youngkin.
Hey, I appreciate President Trump's endorsement, but that's not what's important in Virginia. What's important in Virginia is this, 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 and this. And that's what I think really won in the race. And I think that if Mo had done that from the beginning, hey, I appreciate President Trump's endorsement, that's great, but let's focus on now, and here's what it is. And I think Katie Britt is very likable. I mean, I've met her. I like her. I think she's smart. I don't think she's, where I'm going with this is, but when I hear her speak, I don't hear sort of a centrified message, one message that I walk out of there and go, okay, Katie Britt is this.
Yeah, yeah.
And she even said that to me early on one time. She goes, huh, I hadn't really thought about that. You know, have people leave out of here with one core statement they want to remember. And I think that's a lot of, you know, being a politician is getting out there and having people know, okay, this is who Katie Britt is. This is who Mike Doran is. This is who Mo Brooks is. I think people can define Mo Brooks. I'm still not sure people can define Katie Britt or Mike Doran in a policy way.
That's a great point, right? That is a great point. And that's, you know, and certain candidates, maybe outside Alabama or whatever, that would be good for. But yeah, you know, and former President Trump is not a policy wonk. I mean, it just doesn't line up like that. And so that is interesting. So we'll see. We'll see what comes of this. Let's talk about something even more divisive than the Senate race out there or the gubernatorial race. And that's comments. And with your experience and your wisdom in sports, I got to get your take on this. As Coach Saban has called out Texas A&M for buying players. He's called out Jack State for buying players. He has lit a fire here. Ray, what do you make of all this?
You know, it's interesting. In my, I got to spend 5-6 years, well, really 10 years going back to LSU around Nick Saban. And one of the things I learned is he never says something off the cuff. Anything he says, he is saying it for a reason to get a reaction. And, you know, he and Jimbo Fisher, you know, Jimbo was on his staff. Mm-hmm. They know each other. They play golf together. But I think in calling out Texas A&M, what he's really calling out is the NCAA saying, hey, you guys better get your act together or college football is going to blow up and be just a matter of what school's got the most money. And he also said it to a group of really successful businessmen. So on the other hand, you could be saying, hey, you guys, we're going to need your support if we're going to keep having these highly ranked recruiting classes. You know, we got to get some money flowing to this as well. But I really think he's after the NCAA and trying to send them a shot across their bow saying, and a lot of coaches have said it, but when Nick Saban says it with his track record, people listen.
Oh, it's an E.F. Hutton moment for sure. Yeah. I wonder, I mean, he makes these statements, like you said, to get a response, but they're specific. He's talking about A&M. And then he even goes to, I mean, he talks about Jack State, and now you have Coach Sanders, Deion Sanders, said he's going to push back and address this. And
let me interrupt you for a minute. Let's look at this for a second. So he's gone after a school where Jimbo Fisher, who's been on his staff and he knows and plays golf with, and he goes after Jackson State, coached by Deion Sanders, that he does commercials with for Aflac. So
gotcha.
He knows Deion, and they've got a good relationship. It's not like he went after somebody that, you know, just abstract. So it almost makes you wonder that those guys kind of know this was coming, and they've all got a gentleman's agreement about this whole conversation.
Wow. Right. That's a strong thought, that it's almost like a play they're putting on, and the desired outcome is some change from the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go after Jim Harbaugh.
No, he didn't.
You know? Or he didn't go after, you know, the coach at Oregon, or although
right.
That's another guy that's a former assistant to him. But
they
I'm just
are.
Saying, I think it's interesting that the two people he went after are two people that we know that he knows and has a relationship with, and I don't think it was by accident.
So if NCAA said, okay, well, you know, we hear you, we're going to make, can you put the genie back in the bottle? What can you change here, right? I mean, can you edit, do you have to get rid of the whole thing? Do you edit and put some guardrails on it? What do you do?
I think it's guardrails. I think it's basically saying there's a limit to how much you can make, or that money that you make has got to go into a fund that you can have access to once you graduate, but not right now. I promise you, there are situations in locker rooms where somebody's pulling in $1 million, $1.5 million, and somebody down here is getting $10,000, and it's hard not to, you know, not to have a little jealousy and a little resentment on some of these teams. And I think the key really is to either say, all right, you can make money, but you can't make more than X. And if you do, that money's got to go into a trust fund, or it's got to go into something long term that you can tap once you graduate and get out of school.
It's do you feel that this, you know, this move by Saban, and then what might be a bigger play by Saban Sanders, you know, that this causes some change before, heck, we'll be playing ball by the end of August here?
Yeah, but I remember, again, when this thing first passed, a lot of the states, like Alabama, had fairly restrictive rules that said this, you know, you can only make so much money, and there were restrictions around it. And then at the urging of the coaches, who said, you've put us at a real disadvantage, Alabama, Florida, some other states said, okay, fine, no rules. And the NCAA just left it wide open. The NCAA really thought the federal government was going to get involved and Congress was going to establish some rules. Congress said no. Then you looked at the state by state, and they were so different. And I think that's one of the reasons you've seen Mark Emmert step down as the head of the NCAA as well, that he knows this is, as you said, the genie got out of the box and got out of control. He's not the guy to bring it in and bring it under rein, and they're going to have to find somebody that can handle this thing and a strong enough personality to get everybody to buy in.
This is going to be interesting. We're going to have like a part of our conversation each week that we get an update on this. Yeah, really have opened my eyes to something I hadn't thought about. Remind folks, 1819news.com. What are y'all all about? How do they get involved?
Absolutely. We're a statewide news service for the state of Alabama at 1819news.com. We didn't talk about it. Let me tell you, go there today. Great story about the current baby formula shortage and how other states have responded as opposed to how Alabama is handling it and the governor's office here. But you can go to 1819news.com. You can put in your email, get it in your inbox every morning, or it's free. So, yeah, we appreciate people joining on, and it's been really growing beyond my expectations. We're proud of what we're doing.
Good stuff, Ray. Look forward to our conversation next week. It'll be, wow, it'll be post-primary. There'll be a lot to talk about.
Really will. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:54, FM Talk 106.5, just a couple minutes here before the news. And then Mark Colson is going to join us talking about where we are with diesel prices right now, what it's doing to truckers here in Alabama. I do want to, so on Monday's show, so when Congressman Byrne and I were talking, former AL1 Congressman Bradley Byrne joins me at least once a month, and we've been talking about the situation in Ukraine. And he and I got in a, said, okay, well, you know, Finland and Sweden at that point had said that they wanted to join NATO, right? And then we're talking about the scenario there that basically what Putin had feared the attack on Ukraine had caused. But this is not a sure thing because Turkey is blocking, as a NATO member, which, you know, I've had my discussions about that. But Turkey is blocking the move here to add Finland and Sweden in. I think it has to be unanimous of NATO members to let a new country or countries in. And so Turkey is saying here, and the administration and President Biden are saying, oh, well, they're going to work this out somehow. But Turkey's saying that they have a objection here that Sweden and Finland and maybe other, they went on to say other NATO countries had not sided with them with their fight against the Kurds, right? And there's different, there's the Kurds in Iraq. We've talked about those groups that, you know, have been strongly aligned with the United States, well, aligned with the United States. But there are other Kurdish groups and separatist groups that the Turks fight. Erdogan, so President Erdogan said, NATO allies have never supported Turkey. This is from Reuters. Erdogan said, NATO allies have never supported Turkey in its fight against Kurdish militant groups, including the Syrian Kurdish YPG, which Ankara also views as a terrorist group closely tied to the PKK. He said, NATO expansion is only meaningful for us in the proportion of respect that will be shown to our sensitivities. In other words, y'all going to do what we want for our country, rest of NATO, or we're not going to let other people in. Okay. So that is their open argument right now. It says Erdogan's chief foreign policy advisor, Ibrahim Kalin, has held phone calls with his counterparts from Finland, Sweden, and the United States, among others. The Turkish presidency said, Kalin said the progress on the Nordic countries' NATO bid will be only possible if solid steps are taken addressing Turkey's national security concerns. I just wonder about this. Just let's go in the time machine for a second here, right? You remember, and we talked about it on the show, I forget the year, and Leanna, maybe you can find it, that Turkey, remember they had bought some missile systems from Russia. Remember they had Russian missile systems? But then they wanted U.S. fighter jets. And our worry was that the information, I think, if I get the, and this is off the top of my head, but that the information from our fighter jets would be shared then with the Russians as some kind of, you know, payback for the missile deal or something like that. In other words, they were mixing their Bradleys and Kalashnikovs, right? I mean, in other words, U.S. military-industrial complex equipment with Russian military-industrial complex equipment. And we didn't want that. So I think we held up, didn't we? We held up the fighter jets. And I don't think Turkey got those fighter jets because of the deal they did with the... I just wonder, this is not in the news stories, and this is just pure conjecture. This is just me being me. Do you think there might be something to do with that? Do you think maybe that their concerns about the not having enough support in their fight against the Kurds from the rest of the NATO members, that Turkey, if somehow they got a delivery of U.S. fighter jets, they were allowed to buy these U.S. fighter jets that they wanted, like a lot of them, maybe at a discount, that may change the whole thing? It's just something to watch. I don't know. There, once again, the official story, the story being reported everywhere, is that as you know, Turkey is you know, Turkey is until the rest of NATO says that they're going to come down on the Kurds like Turkey, then they're not going to vote to have Sweden and Finland in there. And yes, and Sweden, Finland, like other NATO countries, had banned armed exports to Turkey. Or maybe you just need to go to Turkey and say, well, if you don't want to vote to have Sweden and Finland in, we could just let y'all go and add these other countries in. We'll see how that works. All right. Mark Coulson, Alabama Trucking Association, is going to join us in a few minutes. Diesel prices and diesel shortages. Of course, that is reflected in what you buy off the shelves because everything moving in a truck out there. What does it mean for Alabama truckers? We'll talk with Mark about that coming back. Plus, in about 35 minutes from right now, Jonathan Armstrong, Baldwin County District 2, is going to join us. Lots to do. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad you're here.